Chapter 4. Nadashe no Hamapiten woke up full of hate, as usual these days. And who and what did she hate today? Oh, let us count them down. To begin, she hated the stateroom she was in. Stateroom being an excessively generous description of the box, 3 meters long, 2 meters wide, 2 meters high, that she now found herself living in. It was smaller than the prison cell she'd resided in for several months and smelled worse. The stateroom featured a fold-up bunk that included straps to secure the occupant when the push fields went out, which was not infrequently. The mattress on the bunk was 2 centimeters thick and apparently made out of particle board and despair. And the sleeping bag she was provided, despite assurances that it had been cleaned and sanitized, smelled like decades of lonely spacemen had diddled themselves in it and left the remains to stew. The stateroom had no windows, no decorations, was apparently only fitfully connected to a ventilation system, and there was a sound, occurring every few minutes, but maddeningly random within those bounds, from somewhere in the room that reminded Nadashe of a baby choking on a metal lolly. On the first night in the stateroom, Nadashe searched in vain for the sound's origin, growing slightly less sane the longer she did so, until she was finally reduced to zipping herself inside of her sleeping bag, hands over ears, huffing the residue of spaceman spunk until she more or less passed out. It was, the captain had assured her, the best stateroom on the ship. Which, to continue, she hated the ship the stateroom was in, the Our Love Couldn't Go On, a freighter that plied a route between the planet Hub and Orleans, a medium-sized habitat that orbited Hub's star, slightly closer than Hub itself. The Our Love was a century old if it was a day, and from the looks of it, was maintained every decade or so, if that. When Nadashe came on board, she'd looked at the walls and bulkheads and wondered not whether she would catch diseases from them, but which ones. Inasmuch as she had hacking bronchitis within a week of her arrival, she wasn't wrong. The Our Love was an independent freighter, which was a polite term for smuggler. It carried a thin veneer of legitimate inventory that would allow it access to berths at Hub and Orleans, and below that veneer lay a deep and limitless ocean of inventory, both banal and insidious, all illegal. Cheap knockoffs, contraband, goods produced outside of legal monopolies, copyright and trademark violations, everything from guns to rum and back again. Everyone knew what the Our Love was and what it was doing. And also, no one cared, because the money was good and Captain Robinette spread it around, not to crew, of course, but to port officials and stevedores and bartenders and imperial tax assessors alike. Captain Robinette was very popular. And to Captain Robinette, Nadashe was just another thing to be smuggled on the Our Love, with the exception that she was never offloaded, just charged an exorbitant rate for every leg of the journey, from Hub to Orleans and then back again. All Robinette was out was a stateroom, which had been used by the ship's 2 unlicensed sex workers, Jeannie and Rolf, for their appointments, which, now that Nadashe thought about it, probably explained the sleeping bag. Jeannie and Rolf were reassigned to Doc Bradshaw's stateroom, and Doc Bradshaw was left to hot bunk, which made her grumble fiercely at Nadashe every time she went to get medicine for her bronchitis. Not that Nadashe had to worry about Doc Bradshaw ratting her out, either on Hub or Orleans. Like nearly every other crew member on the Our Love, Doc Bradshaw was hiding out from the law herself. The ship rumor was that she had stabbed a former lover square in the kidneys. Doc Bradshaw wasn't really named Bradshaw. That was just the name she was given when she berthed on the Our Love, from a list of names Captain Robinette kept on aboard. Bradshaw wasn't really Bradshaw, Jeannie and Rolf weren't really Jeannie and Rolf, and Robinette hadn't been Robinette when he originally shipped out on the Our Love 3 decades earlier. Even the Nadashe had a ship name, for what good it would do in anonymizing the former fiancé of the Crown Prince of the Interdependency, who also happened to be the current Imperial Enemy Number 1. "Rules are rules," Robinette said, and dubbed her Karen. Nadashe fucking hated that name. And hated the stupid rule that everyone got new names. And hated that the Our Love had given her bronchitis. and hated that while being on the Our Love kept her out of prison, being on the Our Love was itself a prison sentence in that she couldn't leave the ship ever. Unlike Doc Bradshaw or Jeannie or Rolf or any other member of this ridiculous misnamed crew, the very second she popped her head out of the ship, she would be spotted and taken. The Our Love crew could be relied on to not rat her out. No one else in the system had the same obligation. Which was another thing. She hated being a fugitive at all. Intellectually, of course, she could understand perfectly well why she was in this position. When one has fomented a planetary uprising, murdered one's own brother while attempting to murder the Emperor, escaped violently from prison, and become complicit in a plot to overthrow royalty, obviously, being a fugitive is not only a likely consequence, but honestly, the best-case scenario. She got it. But that didn't make being sequestered in a smelly stateroom on a rusting ship filled with kidney-stabbing miscreants any better, either on an existential or a day-to-day basis. There was no way Nadashe could avoid the fact that, in no uncertain terms, she had come down in the world. There was a time, not long ago, when she was in line to be the imperial consort and mother to a future emperor. Even if that had not worked out perfectly, and as it turned out it hadn't, she'd had a backup plan to install her brother Grenny as Duke of End prior to the shift of flow streams, assuring that after the shift, the Nohamapetans, not the Woos, would be the new imperial line. Except that hadn't worked out either. Grenny was still on End and may or may not have become the Duke by now, but it turned out that the flow streams were not doing what Nadashe had wanted them to do, that she had been told by her pet flow physicist, Hatid Roynald, they would do. And that rather than shifting, they were collapsing entirely. Nadashe had been furious when she learned that Roynald had been incorrect and would have had her dealt with had her mother not already and inadvertently had her blown up in space, along with dozens of other people, in an ill-advised revenge attempt against the Emperor. Her mother, which was another thing she hated. Not her mother. Let's table that one. But that her mother, the Countess Nohamapetan, had fomented her own coup attempt against the current Emperor. It was bad enough that the coup attempt had failed, but then, after it had failed, her mother decided that the smart thing to do was to shriek at the Emperor that she, the Countess Nohamapetan, had murdered the former Crown Prince, whose death had been previously thought to be an accident. It was, in fact, not the smart thing to do at all. Nadashe hated that not only was her mother imprisoned for treason and murder, the same prison that Nadashe had been in for treason and murder, how was that for family irony? But now the Nohamapetan family had been permanently removed from the administration of their house and its commercial monopoly, which was now being run by a minor member of a much less successful noble house. That would be fucking Kiva fucking Lagos, as the extraordinarily filthy-mouthed Kiva herself would no doubt put it, and who, incidentally, Nadashe entirely hated. Kiva and Nadashe had first crossed paths at university, where, save for the stretch of time Kiva had used Nadashe's brother Granny as a sex toy, they'd mutually decided that the best thing for both of them would be to stay out of each other's way. Nadashe, because she didn't want to spend any time consorting with her inferiors, and Kiva, because she was too busy fucking her way through everyone else at the university and couldn't care less if Nadashe was in her path or not. This avoidance had also worked in the subsequent years as well, until Kiva had somehow apparently and literally banged her way into discovering Nadashe's involvement in the assassination attempt against the Emperor and the murder of her own brother. For this, she was awarded temporary control of the local House of Nohamapetan business. This led to, shall we say, further issues? As Kiva combed through the Nohamapetan finances with a fine-toothed comb, discovering rather a lot of incriminating money trails. Kiva was foul-mouthed, low-class trash as far as Nadashe was concerned, which would have been enough for Nadashe to hate her. But the fact that this foul-mouthed, low-class trash was now in control of her family company and fortune while Nadashe was reduced to a 2x2x3-meter box while nursing a persistent cough took things over the top for her, hate-wise. For all that, Kiva Lagos did not hold the top spot on the Nadashe Nohama Peten hate list. Neither did the Our Love, its crew, her stateroom, her fugitive status, her mother's stupidity, or bronchitis. The top spot was held, and was held by a considerable margin, by the current Emperor Greyland II. Of course, there were all sorts of reasons for this, starting with the fact that she was Emperor at all, which had not been expected, and which, due to the Emperor's heterosexuality and apparent unwillingness to be flexible about it, had definitively robbed Nadashe of her chances to marry an Emperor or birth another. Continuing with the fact that the Emperor then refused to seriously consider Nadashe's brother Amit as a consort, shutting the Nohama Petens out of the running for marrying into the imperial line in any way. And then that her response to the House of Nohama Peten's repeated treacheries was to disenfranchise it entirely. Which, while eminently reasonable from a legal and dynastic point of view, was decidedly inconvenient for Nadashe, who was currently bearing the brunt of these decisions. But more than anything else, Nadashe hated Greyland's persistent unwillingness to just simply die, whether from bombs or runaway shuttlecraft or explosive decompression into the vast depths of space, or, hell, she was not picky, a wadge of pie crust stuck in the trachea or something banal like that. Pie crusts would do. Honestly, anything that dropped Greyland dead to the floor would be satisfactory to Nadashe at this point. Nadashe was well aware that in having this opinion, she could be accused of crossing fully into the category of one-dimensional villain with regard to the Emperor. Her defense, such as it was this: how much the Emperor had cost her. She had cost her a brother, and a mother, and a noble house, and a future entwined with the imperial line. Whether the Emperor had initially set out to do all these things, and the extent to which both Nadashe and her family had been the co-authors of their own misfortune, was immaterial to this. When everything came down to it, to the bare, rusting stateroom walls of it, Nadashe had very little left to her but hate for the Emperor, and the continuing frustration that the aggravating naïf who held the title continued to exist. At this point, if Nadashe did nothing else but bring down Greyland II, she'd consider herself even in the game of life. But of course, she still had other grander plans than that. There was a knock on her stateroom door, and shortly after that, the door moaned open to reveal Executive Officer Evans, who, as rumor had it, burned up several of his friends trying to make homemade and evidently highly flammable illegal substances in a bathtub back in his home system. "Karen," Evans said, and Nadashe visibly winced at this. "Your visitor is here and in the mess. I'll take you to him." "Thank you," Nadashe said, coughed, grabbed her tablet, and then followed Evans through the passageways of the Our Love, which smelled of metal and mildew and old. "I was told I have to refer to you as Karen," her visitor said as she entered the mess. Exo Evans scowled at the flippancy from the visitor and left. "Does this mean I need a code name as well?" "Would you like a code name?" Nadashe asked, sitting at one of the cramped, dingy tables in the cramped, dingy room and motioning at her visitor to do the same. "Not really," her visitor said. "Proster Wu is a good name. I think I'll keep it for now." He sat and looked around. "Not your usual surroundings, Karen."
"It's temporary."
"Is it?"
"If you didn't think so, you wouldn't be here. Which reminds me, were you followed?"
Proster looked annoyed at this question. "I'm currently the highest-ranking surviving member of the House of Wu, save the Emperor herself. Of course I was followed." Nadashe tensed. Proster put up a hand. "But as far as anyone knows, the reason I'm here is to pick up a pallet of off-house brandy and port, which is currently being tended to by my driver. All very banal contraband. You're safe." Nadashe relaxed. Then,
"So now are you convinced that I am still a force to be reckoned with?"
Proster smiled. "I have to admit that it took me a minute to realize that you had poisoned Darren. I was expecting something else."
"What else were you expecting?"
"Well, I don't know," Proster admitted.
But you were the one to send a shuttlecraft barreling into a cargo bay to kill the Emperor. I suppose I was expecting something louder. Now it was Nadashe's turn to smile. She pulled out her tablet, fired up an application, and then placed the tablet in front of Proster. "What's this?" he asked. "It's the trigger for the bombs I had put into the House of Wu board conference room," Nadashe said. "They've been there for at least as long as the poisoned tea was in Darren's assistant's little drink stash." Proster looked doubtfully at the trigger app. "And how did you get those there anyway?" "Come now, Proster," Nadashe said. "You don't expect me to give away my corporate secrets, do you?"
"Actually, if you want me to keep talking to you, I do."
"Fine. When you get back, look for a member of your custodial staff who hasn't come into work since the day Darren died. When you find their name, have your people look into their background and whereabouts. You'll discover that they don't actually exist, despite having worked for your custodial staff for years."
Nadashe motioned around her.
"This dingy little ship isn't the only place where fake identities are the order of the day."
"Corporate espionage," Proster said.
"Oh, don't pretend to be shocked. It's not like the House of Wu doesn't do the same damned thing."
"Where is this person now?"
"Back home," Nadashe said. "Or on their way, anyway. Everyone wants to be home these days. Apparently, civilization is ending."
Proster pointed to the tablet with the trigger. "What's the point of showing me this?"
"You said you were expecting something louder. I wanted to make the point to you that I could have been much louder, if I thought it suited my needs."
She took the tablet, closed the application, and handed the tablet to Proster.
"Here, a souvenir. A little reminder that I didn't have to just get rid of Darren. I could have taken out all the important Wu cousins and thrown the entire house into chaos. I had that option. I didn't take it."
Proster took the tablet.
"I don't know why not. I would have in your situation."
"Well, perhaps if you weren't in the room, Proster, I might have."
Proster was momentarily startled.
"Me?"
"You said it yourself. You're the most senior Wu at this point.
I don't think you have plans to let anyone else have the general directorship after all this nonsense, do you?
It's tradition for whoever holds the directorship of security not to run for the general directorship." Nadashe snorted, which then caused her to cough, ruining the moment.
"Come on, Proster," she said nevertheless. "Things are a little past that now."
"Nadashe...
Karen... Just because I thought Darren was a grasping fool who had no business running the House of Wu doesn't mean I want that job for myself."
"Who else is there?" Nadashe said.
"You know your cousins. Do any of them fit the bill? Especially now when there's nothing to look forward to but crisis after crisis?" Proster was silent at this, as Nadashe knew he would be. Proster might have been willing to let Nadashe poison Darren, and Nadashe was delighted to do so, as the two of them had a history that she felt obliged to revenge. But at the end of the day, he was for the House of Wu through and through. He had been a power behind the throne long enough to know there was no one else among the Wus who merited that throne right now. Nadashe enjoyed watching Proster semi-grudgingly admit that to himself and picture himself, finally, irrefutably, running the most powerful house in the interdependency. Or at least the most powerful house for now.
"Come to your point," Proster said finally.
"My point is that right now, we can't afford chaos."
Nadashe pointed to the tablet now in Proster's possession.
"Blowing up the directors would have caused chaos. But poisoning Darren potentially restores order. Restores the directors to their rightful position running the House of Wu. Offers you, who understands the need for order more than any of the other directors, a way to return things to how they're supposed to be."
Proster smirked at this. "I'm not buying the idea that you did this out of the goodness of your heart."
"Of course I didn't," Nadashe agreed. "I had my own scores to settle, but I settled them, and only them. Doing anything else would have been ruinous. We're at the end of days, Proster. What we do now determines whether we, whether any of us, survive what's coming.
And how do I fit into this? Nadashe nodded again toward the tablet.
I've earned a little credit with you.
A little?
It's fair to say your dear cousin the Emperor is not the most popular person among the noble houses and the Parliament at the moment.
Since she put a sizable percentage of both into prison recently on the count of treason, that's fair to say, Proster agreed.
And you would agree that doing so has contributed to chaos at the worst possible time for everyone.
Proster regarded Nadashe. If you say so.
Then what I'd like from you, Proster Wu, is to organize a little get-together for me. To talk to those whom our Emperor has discomfited.
You understand how difficult that's going to be, Proster said, after a moment of goggling in disbelief. The Emperor already has all their houses under investigation. Your house has been disenfranchised. You, he motioned around the mess, aren't exactly in good odor or have the means to do much about that.
And again I say, if you really believed that, Proster, you wouldn't be here now.
Proster held up the tablet. If you had been smart, you wouldn't have given me this.
If you were smart, Proster, you would have realized by now that I wouldn't have given you that if I didn't have other ways of getting what I want from you.
Well, that sounds like a threat.
I'd rather call it insurance, Nadashe said,
which I won't have to use anyway, since you and I want the same thing. Which is?
Order and survival on our terms, not your cousin's.
Proster thought about this for a minute.
You must truly hate Greyland, he said. I don't hate her, Nadashe lied.
I think she's in over her head. The problem is when she drowns, she's going to take all of us with her. You, me, all the houses, and the interdependency. I'd rather not drown. Proster stood. I'm going to have to think about this. Nadashe stayed sitting.
Of course you are. When you're done, you know where I am.
Proster nodded and headed out.
But Proster...
Proster paused by the door. Yes?
Remember, we don't have much time.
Proster grunted and left. Nadashe sat alone in the mess, hating and planning and wondering, not entirely idly, how much time all of them actually had left.